This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Carm Capriato here, the pioneer of aftermarket podcasts with Dunnell Academy number 235. We're talking about creating a training culture. Now, this is repurposed from our weekly live broadcast. I welcome you to subscribe to my YouTube channel, Carm Capriato, to stay up to date with every live show. You know, training in this industry is always a hot topic to discuss. Now, unfortunately, there's too many shops that don't realize training employees and business owners must be a non-negotiable in order to have a profitable and sustainable business. If you're listening to this podcast, you're already taking action to level up. Take a moment. Share this episode with just one person, a friend, a network person. It may change their life personally and professionally, and they'll thank you. In this episode, Dave Shadeen, CompuTrek Coaching and Training, Brian Bates, Eagle Automotive, Columbine Hills, Colorado, was an MSO with five stores, Littleton, Colorado area, and Brian Holthy, Genesis Automotive and RV in Tacoma, Washington, who is also the Pierce County ASA chapter president. They discuss why training is important, how to incentivize training, and what to look for when hiring people. Such a great discussion, and I know you'll learn just one thing. Hey, thanks to our partner Shopware for providing this episode. Hey, what do Worldpack, Mitchell One, Kukui, and QuickBooks have in common? Well, they work with Shopware. Connecting the aftermarket together, Shopware's all-in-one platform maximizes shop efficiency and delivers customer satisfaction without compromise. Get the shop management software trusted across our industry. On the web at getshopware.com. Hey, remember, we bring you stories, perspectives, and points of view, and we share them, and you learn. One thing I want to share with you all is I did an episode with Kareem Morsley, and it was all about a total management commitment to training. Now, we're talking about the culture of training in this one, but I really need to encourage you to go and listen to Kareem's episode. This is, if you will, a bookend to many of the episodes we have done on training. And one more thing. We have a friend. David, I think you know Carl Sabuco, right?
Yeah, I do. I just talked to him on the phone yesterday.
Great. Well, he says to me, he writes this in Facebook about the show today. He says, this is a challenging subject and is complex with different ages in shops, different upbringing of senior techs and how they get trained and knowing the profile of your team as well as the owner's objective. And that was his take on what we're going to talk about today. So let's jump in this, Dave. Thank you very much for bringing the topic to us. I want to talk about the elephant in the room. And the elephant in the room in my mind, let's get this right up front, is paying for training.
I have a unique perspective on an auto repair shop and cash flow and that. And in my mind, I've always thought that I personally have never paid for training for any of my employees. In fact, I never paid my parts bills. I never paid my rent. I never paid my employees. My customers all did. And so when I came from that perspective, I realized that training is one of the number one customer benefits that we can be at. And the most, to me, the most moral ethical thing you can do is be profitable. So you can't afford the training that actually your customers want you to have. Your employees want you to have it so that they have a longevity of a career and they've always stayed relevant in their career.
I want to talk about onboarding employees. And if I was a technician, guys, and I was going to work at your place, and literally training and the culture of your business was critically important to me. I'm not looking for a job in another hobby thing. I'm looking for a career. Do you guys hear from technicians that they are looking to and ask you questions? How often do you train? Do you have any hours? Do you pay for training? Are we hearing that today?
Absolutely. I recently just hired a guy from a GM dealership because they promised training and he was unable to get it from them. And so we expect 45 hours a year of training, whether it's personal development, RV, or mechanical.
That's interesting, guys, that a GM dealer wouldn't be providing training.
Well, as a former GM fixed operations manager, there were seasons where we poured into training, and then there were seasons where the budget got a little tight, and so I was told by upper management that I had to pull back. And so it may not have been the service manager's issue. It may have been, hey, we didn't sell enough cars up front. We need all the money we can get out of service. So there's a lot of things in a dealership environment that could create that.
There's always a story behind the story, isn't there? So let's talk about hiring the right people, Brian.
You know, and it kind of hit me when Dave was talking about the GM, him being a fixed operations manager at the dealership and whatnot. And to me, it really boils down to where your heart is, right? A lot of dealers, they're checking a box, and they really do pour into training if they have, if the manufacturer says, hey, you don't have enough qualified and trained certified technicians, then that's when they focus on it. And for me, it really boils down to having the right heart, and the heart really boils down to hiring people that want to grow. And you know, if you're a company that wants to grow, and if you don't want to grow as a company, you know, that's a bad sign. So everybody should be looking to grow in some way, right? Even if you're not looking to grow at the bottom line, growing qualitatively, growing within the community, growing, you know, just personal growth, and being better people, right? You know, learning what our fullest potential is in every area of our lives. And that's really when I'm looking at a candidate, that's what I'm really looking for. Because generally speaking, we've either vetted whether they can do the job that we need them to do or not. What we try to do is make sure that instead of putting out fires, that the fires never occur. And one of the fires that do occur, or that does occur, is the training fire. We don't have people that are attending training. They're not developing themselves. They're not growing. And very quickly in today's climate in the automotive industry, you become irrelevant. Struggling with that is a fire that has to be put out at some point. And that versus somebody that you hire on and they say, man, I really want to grow. I really want to have a place that is training people, because I want to learn more and more about my profession, and I'm in it, I'm a professional, and I'm committed to this industry. Those are the people that I feel like are really easy to bring on board. One of my favorite sayings is, you know, Lou Holtz said, hey, I've coached bad players and I've coached good players before, and frankly, when I have better players, I'm a better coach. And so, you know, and I have pulled my hair out from having some people on the team that I think back and go, man, I missed something when I brought them on board.
Addition by subtraction. That's what you just said. And, you know, we've done shows on, we just hang on there a little too long to some people because they weren't fitting. They weren't right. But let me ask a really important question. Training, you just said it, you know, are they being trained? Are they being trained? Are we pulling training from the bottom, or are we pushing training from the leadership aspect? And this whole show is about that culture. Is the leader of the company critical to saying, I'm going for business management training, I'm going for marketing training, and here is the training I'm recommending? Are you keeping a resume on training for your people? Are you involved in any kind of learning management system that attracts this? Are we doing assessments pre and post? Because just checking the box and paying for a seminar doesn't mean that the communications got through. It will not help your business if they're just checking a box.
Exactly. Well, and I think also, I've had people that I've sent to some very expensive training that thought it was great training and didn't apply it. And so you're kind of hitting the nail on the head there, Carm, is that it has to be applied. But in order for it to be applied, it has to be something that's relevant to who you're sending to the training. And the best way to find that out is to ask them, where do they want to grow in the industry? Where do they want? I love Brian Holte, that he says, hey, it doesn't have to be technical training. We're talking about personal growth training, right? Any sort of development where you invest in yourself over a time period. And when we really look in and dig into that and review that is during our quarterly reviews. And our quarterly reviews are very little about numbers. I mean, my feeling is they get a review every other week, right, when they get a paycheck, and they can see the numbers, and we go over those numbers as a team. When we're having quarterly reviews, it is more based on, hey, where are you right now in your career? Where do you want to go? How are you going to get there? How can we help? Where are your frustrations? Where are you gaining traction? And then setting a plan together that we help them and they help themselves, all that sort of symbiotic relationship there. And then in 3 months, let's come together and let's talk about it again. And that really gives us the opportunity to connect to them as a person as well, and to really create that good relationship with the team, and make sure that they know that we that hopefully, to build that trust and let them know that we care about them and that we want to help them. And that's really the foundation for any sort of relationship that you have with people on your team. They want to know they can trust you. They want to know you care, and they want to know that you can help them.
So with that in mind, to get to that point where you're doing the review, and back to Carm's question, what are we doing for onboarding? And, Brian, both Brians, what are some of the things during the interview process? What are you asking them, sharing with? How do you draw out that you found somebody who's naturally wired that wants the training? And if in the interview process you don't sense they're into training, what do you do with that person? They may have all the, everything else that you want as a top producer, but if they're not into training, usually their resume show every 2 to 3 years are bouncing around. That's another indicator of a resume that bounces around like that. But what are some of the practical things that you do to attract that person who wants training?
First thing I do is I just ask them. I says, how do you feel about training? What's important to you about training? If it's not important to them, then that kind of gives me the answer right there. But if it is, they're going to tell you where areas they want to be trained in, and you can help guide them along if I'm looking for people that have more interest in EV. And so I'll ask if they've ever done that, had the experience, are you interested in that area? And they're going to tell you right up whether or not they are.
Right. I would agree with Brian is calling that out and being, very upfront about it and straightforward is really instrumental. I would also say that we don't necessarily look at a training mentality as much as a growth mentality.
Yeah.
And so really some of the questions we ask is, how do you stay on top of the latest technology in the industry, whether they're service advisor or technician? How do you what's the last book that you read? That's a fascinating question. We had a guy tell us one time that the last book he read was the Iliad, and my general manager said, well, it's much better in its native language if you ever get a chance to read it in Greek. Ancient Greek. And because you got to be careful, because there are a lot of ways that people learn, and sitting inside of a classroom being instructed to is not necessarily the best way for people to learn. So we've had people say that, I do this, or I have friends and I'm on chat forums, and they're really immersed in learning, but it's not in a classroom setting. So you really have to open your mind and say, okay, does this person have a growth mentality, even if he doesn't have a training, classroom sort of mentality? Because those could be the right people. And so then we really dig into, how are you growing as a person? What sort of, plan do you have? What are your aspirations? And then you can really dig into, I love, there's a book called, The Ideal Team Player by Patrick Lencioni, and he says he really likes looking for people that are humble, hungry, smart. And the smart is the emotional intelligence, not the IQ, not the intelligence quotient. When we dig into that, we're really looking for that humble, hungry, smart. And a lot of that has to go with the training, because if they're not humble, then they don't feel like they should be growing. But if they do have, a good sense of humility, they realize that, hey, look, I'm in a good spot right now, but I know that, I'm not the perfect person that I could be, and I need to continue to grow because I'm driven to grow as a person.
Both Brian's have spoke to the personal development side of things. One of the questions I encourage shop owners or who's ever doing the interview process is to ask the question, when's the last time you invested in you to be a better version of you? And give me an experience of that. And it's amazing how many people don't even focus on that. And that leads a doorway to knowing a little bit more about the individual as well. The other realm, and as you talked about going to training and coming back, what do? They didn't implement it. One of the things I learned actually in the dealership, when I worked at a dealership where we had 26 technicians, and when I became shop foreman, one of the things that I implemented was when the techs came back or advisors came back, anybody came back from a training, we had a shop meeting, and they had to bring three of the top three takeaways. And I teed it up before they left. By the way, when you come back, you're going to give the three top takeaways that we can implement and put in place right away. What I find out really interesting is that a lot of shop owners, when we do, we have a unique style of advisor training, and that advisor training, they go, I'm going to put this young person through it. And I say, okay, we can do that. But here's what I see happen all the time. You put that young advisor into some elevated advisor training that your other advisors haven't had. They come back and try to implement it, and they get shut down. And now they're like, well, why do I even go to training? I don't even want to go to training because they're going to override anything I do anyway. And so if the culture there is not receiving of somebody that's learned something new, whether it's a fit or not, you still need to let them have the voice. Let their training experience be a positive experience when they come back into the team.
Right. I'd agree with you, Dave. I've learned many years ago that same lesson is that if you only send one person to the training, that it does have a very short shelf life, because everybody in the company, everybody in the store needs to be bought in and has to be educated on where you want the company to go, including the owner. So if you're looking at some very high level training for your service advisor and your manager, if you don't know what that training is, or if you can't walk that walk as well, then there's the law of the lid, right? Is those people are only going to grow to the level that you are as a leader, and if you don't understand what they're trying to accomplish, then they don't have the environment to take that training to its fullest potential. So one of the things that we've done at our business development group is when we do training, if we have a class, we actually give a package for three people in the company instead of just an individual package. So we'll sell a class for $200 or $50 or whatever we decide the price is going to be. But we make sure that everybody knows that's for three people in for a ticket for good for three people in the shop. And if more people want to show up, then we calculate what the food cost is, and we charge them for food, because that's generally, you know, the only right. expense at that point. The seats are already paid for, so it gets more people into the class. So somebody that's trying to make a decision on how many people do I send, it's not a financial decision. It's more of a are they bought into and do they want it decision.
And one of the things that rewards, you know, the training to keep it going is rewarding that. And I know Brian Holte, you and I have worked together for quite a bit of years now, working on an incentive plan that works. And I love how you described it, you know, it is a journey. You put something in place. So many shop owners, before they do something, they want to have this perfection before they set it going. And so they end up waiting their whole life for perfection to show up. And just get something going. So, Brian, if you could talk a little bit about what are some of the incentivized things that you've done in your shop that perpetuates training?
Okay, I got to stop for a moment and say this. Brian, you brought up humble, hungry, and smart. Well, we did a show on employee reviews from Brian Kelly up at Valley Auto Electric in Covington, Washington, chairman of the ASA Northwest Group. And he talks, it's all about hungry, humble, and smart. And when they do their reviews, their quarterly reviews, that's the guidelines that they use. Now, in Patrick Leoncioni's book on my books page on the website, that book is there. So if anyone wants to go out and get that book or at least find out something about it, you can find it on our books page. Because every time we mention a book on this show, I put it up there so that everyone has a reference to go to. So thank you so much for that. Now, Dave, I'll let you go back to that question for Brian.
Brian Holte has gone to some great lengths to build some incentive plans that really do that. And Brian, if you could talk to that, that'd be awesome.
I incentivize it by having the 45 hours of training a year. That kind of gets them into the ability to earn bonuses based upon the number of certificates they've got. A ASE Master Tech can earn up to $3 an hour bonus for every sold hour. And that's based on production, efficiency, and his attendance, et cetera. So the program is developed so that it they have a desire to be there. They want the training so that they can be better at what they do, so they can flag more hours. And it makes them better at their job, and it pays them to meet all those requirements.
Is there any pushback when you sit down with someone and say, hey, coming to work for us, it's great. You got to do 45 hours?
You know, I have not had anybody give me a pushback on an hours of training. And we do strive to make sure that training's available for every person, whether it's online training. I have set into my e-time. I'm sure everybody knows many shops have e-time, but a tech can be paid e-time for doing training during the day, or he can do it after hours. And all he's got to do is turn in a pass certificate for a class. If it's a three-hour class, he gets paid 3 hours. If it's a two-hour class, he gets 2 hours. All he's got to do is turn in the pass certificate, and we have to assume and trust that he took the class and got information and then took the test and passed it.
So I guess if I was sitting down with someone and we were interviewing to come to work in our place that has a very huge and important training culture overall, but training is right up there, and I say, by the way, let's talk about some of the must-haves, some of the non-negotiables, and that is the 45-hour of training per year, and I'll give you a little idea of how that works and what you can do. And they say, well, can I do 30? Do you hire that person?
Well, I haven't had that occasion, but I would say probably not, because if they're going to ask to only do 30, they probably don't want to do any.
How you do one thing's how you do everything.
Right.
That's almost an altruistic statement, but if they're going to settle, compromise, not play a big game in training, they're not going to play a big game in production, and the way they show up on the team. Their desire for training is really desire for growth, whether it's
Absolutely.
Personal development or your career, and that. And so if they're going to play a small game there, they're going to play a small game in everything they do, including working on Mr. and Mrs. Jones's car. And when we're talking about high-tech vehicles now with so many safety issues that could potentially be there, I don't want my techs or techs that I coach now, I don't want them playing a small game. We can't survive in this industry anymore to play a mediocre small game. We've got to play that big game if we're going to stand out and have a livelihood. You know, one of the things is it's about, you know, we have an onboarding package where we help shops bring on top performers. One of the languages that we use is a great lifetime earning potential that you'll have, because we're selling a lifetime. We're not selling a job with a paycheck week to week. We're selling a lifetime career, and you want your language to attract that, including even elevating, instead of just paid training with bonuses, like in Brian's case there. And it could be consistency too. Hey, you know what, 45 hours a year. But we're going to break that down into a quarter. And if you consistently hit each quarter's goal, and you do that for the whole year, not only the 45, but you didn't just do it the last quarter of the year, the last month to go get your bonus, you did it consistently throughout the year, then you have a bonus or reward for a consistency bonus. We talk about that with sold hours and weekly hours or monthly hours or quarterly hours. You reward what it is that you want. There's a phrase out there, I love this phrase. It's that which you want, create the space for what you want to actually exist. And some of that comes from the incentive plan. And sometimes, and I'm finding this with a lot of especially the younger generation, it's not so much money. It might be just time off. Hey, if you do a certain amount of training, it might be, you know, a day off paid, or, you know, here's an extra $500 when you go on vacation to help pay for your gas or your room. And that there's a lot of different incentive ways to do that.
Hey, Carm here. Now, coming up, find out why it's important to lead by commitment and not by command. The automotive industry is blazing through with so many twists and turns and changes. Careful not to crash. Yet amidst it all, the demand for repair is a constant. So the questions remain, will repair shops adapt or die? Well, our friends at Shopware Shop Management Software get it. Their CEO is a shop owner. They understand what it takes to repair cars, and they're ready for the next big thing in automotive. Shopware tailors mainstream web-based technology to the needs of the industry's leading repair shops. You can run entirely digital, phone optional, and paper-free. Interactive online repair orders will not only meet the needs of contemporary drivers, but they are blown away by the experience. Connecting the aftermarket together, Shopware's ecosystem enables next-generation shop efficiency and customer satisfaction without compromise. Full-service onboarding and best-in-class support provide everything a shop needs to transform its business and stay competitive long into the future. Enjoy more accurate quotes, more profitable jobs, busier technicians, and of course, happier customers. On the web at getshopware.com. How many techs, you know, shop owners, you know, techs, they want a paid, structured training program because the goalposts move every day. And if they don't stay up and on it, they're going to atrophy. I bet you there's thousands, hundreds of thousands of them out there working in our industry that want this so bad, but either their owners aren't giving it to them or they don't know how to ask because the open lines of communications aren't there.
Yeah, it's funny. We talked about, you know, Carlo posted beforehand, and Carl and I, we were having a conversation in that. And one of the things is the age of the technician. And so I'm saying that, like, some A-plus level techs now, I mean, they're in their 50s, and some of them are kind of done training. They're almost in a little bit of a retirement mode for the next 10 years or so, or 15 years that they've got left. And so some of that has edged away. And part of that is the culture they were in didn't keep training exciting the whole length of their career.
See, I don't think they can coast. Do you, Brian? What do you think?
They want to, but I have one tech that fits that bill, and it's difficult. It's something you just have to keep, you know, nudging them along, and it's, you know, I'm tired, I ache, I don't want to do it, you know, and I already know all this, but the technology's changing. It can't just be seniority.
Brian Bates, with the number of shops that you have, and obviously the number of techs that you have working for you, what's your take on that?
First of all, I don't think there's a one size fits all, and I think that's where a lot of companies that do grow, especially to multiple locations, they do try to make streamline things and make them efficient, and you really lose that personal creativity and approach, customization to each person's individual training. And I love Dave's thoughts as far as incentivizing technicians and service advisors. Everybody on your team should be incentivized. You know, my CFO is incentivized to do training as well. The thing about it is, what are they looking for? And there's an interesting there's an interesting guy back in the 50s. He did some studies on industrial psychology, and he talked about these two things that really separate. And it's a great probably full 2-hour podcast, but basically what he found was that after people are happy with their environment, then they look for more qualitative things, and that can come in the form of recognition, increased responsibility, achievement, meaningful work, all those sorts of things. And so really, to me, the compensation for that is more of a recognition, and that recognition can come in a bunch of different forms, right. and the achievement is in there as well. So when you go back to how do you get people excited about training, you start feeding into that process where the regular reviews become, you know, a core of that. Hiring becomes a core. Onboarding is a core of that, because everything kind of dovetails into each other. So when you're talking about training, you relate it back to those, you know, those things that they are looking for to feed their soul, right? I mean, you're really talking about after you've fed their being, you know, physically, they've got security. Now, how do you feed their soul? And achievement is a big part of that. And having that connection and understanding those what they want to achieve and how that aligns with what you want to achieve as a company is extremely important. And that's different for everybody in your company, although you can probably put them in a few different groups.
Are you talking about Maslow's hierarchy of needs?
No. This is Hertzberg's two-factor theory. It's a guy that built on Maslow, but it's fascinating, and it's just gold when you look at how do you motivate people with, you know, with who they are and what they want as a person. And And again, everything feeds into this. So if you know what their goals are, and if their goals don't align with your goals, and that kind of goes back to the question of if they don't want to train, do you still hire them? Well, no, because we want to grow as a company, and they don't want to grow as a person. Well, then that's going to be at odds with each other during the whole time that they're working with you, until it becomes frustrating and you have to ask them to leave.
So how are we going to deal with the A plus techs that Brian Holthy, I think you said, that are in their slumber years, I don't know, 50, 55, or was it you, Dave, who said that? How are we going to sit down with them and say, you haven't been to training in a few years and it doesn't look like you want to, and look at all that we're doing, and you know our commitment in our culture on training. Can I help you get up and over this blockage that you have?
In the onboarding process, we have a unique, what we call enhanced job description. Job description talks about character traits, behavioral traits, some of their interests, their passions. And it also talks about training and what that spells out in the job description. And at the bottom, it says, I am committed to fulfilling, meeting or exceeding the above expectations around the duties, responsibilities, and training with that. I am committed to that. And now when somebody doesn't want to train, or they don't do the task on the job description, my encouragement is, don't point out where they failed. Point to their commitment, and that's where you come to them. That's leading by commitment versus command. And when you lead by commitment, then you say, hey, you know, Bill, I know you to be a man of your word, and you gave your word and commitment that you were committed to training. And I've noticed that the last two or three classes you've turned down to go. Some of those legitimate excuses, you had something else that night you'd already planned. I get that, but it seems like it's more of a pattern now. And I know you're a man of your commitment. What are some other things that are maybe getting in the way of your commitment that you had around training? And now I'm having a heart-to-heart conversation. I'm having it around a commitment and not pointing out a failure in his life. Does that make sense? Same with sold hours, GPs, hours per parameter. And that, I mean, how many GP conversations can you have with somebody? Most advisors don't need another round of GP training. What they need is, they need to be addressed what's holding their commitment level down. And when you go break through that glass ceiling, watch the GPs soar.
Right. I'd like to build on that as well, Dave, is that, you know, when you're looking at the context behind why is the training important, and that's what I always ask myself, what does this mean in context to who we are as a company and the purpose of the company, and who do I want to be as a business owner, and hiring the right people. And so when you really look at that training, for us, our purpose of the company is to make people's lives better. And our mission is to grow our company so that we can make more people's lives better as we grow as a company and make the community better. Awesome. Then when you start looking at the commitments are generally based on, when we hired somebody, we hired them because they enjoy making other people's lives better. And that's why they really enjoy working on cars. We've interviewed people where we say, what got you? Why do you love this industry? What do you like about working on cars and just the people that are in this industry and whatnot? And if they don't really have a good answer for that, and that it's all about, well, I just love making money and turning hours and whatnot, we know that that's probably not going to be a deep enough reason for them to work with our company. And so when we have somebody that we brought on board and they said, hey, I love helping people, I love making people's lives better, I love how I can do that with, you know, by working on cars or by selling the work on cars, and then we have an issue with training, and we then we can start not only relating it back to their commitment as a person and them being a person of their word, but also what that means for them as, you know, as being true to what their passion is and what they enjoy doing, and what their commitment was to come to the company and where the company is going. And we say, hey, look, you're wanting to make people's lives better. The training keeps us relevant and keeps us on the cutting edge and at the top, so that we're doing the best and serving our customers the best. Plus, it allows you to achieve and earn, you know, the sort of living that you're earning, and be true to the people in your personal lives. Now, let's talk about how training affects that. And if you stop training and growing as a person, then all those commitments that you've made to the team members, to us as a company, and to your personal commitments of family and friends and community, maybe, you know, if they're spiritual, even, you know, to their God, then all of a sudden training becomes more meaningful, right. And it really digs in deep to their soul versus just saying, hey, look, you know, this was a commitment and now you're going to have to do it or you're going to look silly, right?
Getting down to the heart and the core of somebody, even the realm, and a lot of in the industry, we don't really want to talk about the spiritual aspect, but we're spiritual beings and there is an aspect to that. And we need to nurture that in a way that's self-serving that particular person. One of the ways that I believe that we can do that is some people have a gift of teaching. That's part of their spirit. That's what they were created with. And so in part of keeping training alive is having a mentor in in-house training versus a not outhouse training, but outside training. but have, you know, when you bring somebody on board, they can be all this commitment stuff about training and the rest, but when they get on board, nobody trained them in their position. Even if they're an A-level tech, they need, you know, partner them up. Carlo does a good job of this. They have an onboarding buddy, so to speak, for a certain period of time that shows them the rhythm of the shop and teaches them about the culture of the shop. And they put somebody that does that who's naturally gifted with that. And so when you're not only training that they're giving, but training or that they're receiving, but training that they're actually giving back into the team is a great way to build mentorship. And mentorship is not just training, it's investing in that person. It's somebody being a coach, an in-house coach, so to speak, that once you train something, it goes in here, right? It's logical, it's a methodology, it's a process. And then, but if they didn't get it, if you feed it one more time, does it mean they're going to get it? No. Now you need somebody who knows the gift of coaching, which is more the best coaches ask questions. We don't, if you keep giving statements, you're a trainer. If you keep giving the how-to, you're a trainer. And a lot of our coaches in our industry, and there's some really good trainers in the industry, some of them are calling themselves coaches, and they just regurgitate the training over and over again, but they don't coach to the result. And that's the difference of a true coach. And so having somebody inside your organization who you've invested in being a coach, being a, you know, a technician coach, being an advisor coach, a manager coach, HR coach, it's just a huge, it adds so much to a culture of growth or a culture of training.
I love listening to John Maxwell, and so there's a lot of that goes in there. And one thing that I'd like to build on that, Dave, is that people go through three phases of their life, sort of businesses. There's a survival phase, there's a success phase, and there's a significance phase. And looking at your company, there's probably somebody in each one of those phases in your company. So knowing that somebody's survival is important to them gives you the opportunity to serve them that way. Their success, moving them to success. When somebody's going from success to significance, being a mentor and mentoring that as well is really important. And one of the things that John Maxwell talks about a lot is climbing ladders, right? And ladders. And he says, you know, hey, look, your first step is to climb the ladder, and the second step is to hold the ladder for the next person, and the third step is to build the ladders, right? And and as business owners, our job is to be leaders, and leaders mean, you know, being a true leader means that you do have people that you're helping them to grow, and that you're mentoring them. And as you're mentoring them and your company grows, then those people should be taught to mentor other people and to grow leaders. So really, our, you know, the purpose of leadership is not to lead as much as it is to build more leaders. And that really ties into this whole training thing, right? And the training, in my mind, is again not a training idea, but a real growth mentality. And when your company has a growth culture, then training just becomes a natural part of that. And when you find people that are really tuned into that and love that and eat it up, those people tend to stay with your company and become very loyal. But you have to feed that. If they're not interested in that and they feel like this is an annoyance, then generally speaking, they're going to weed themselves out. And sometimes we have to help them along that journey. But the idea is that if it's true that you're either growing or dying, then you want to grow. And in order to grow, that means that you have to mentor and help other people grow in your business. And the more you grow true leaders, then that becomes multiplied. And then those leaders then grow the people people that are working that you cannot touch. You know, you want to impact people, not impress them, right? Impacting is when you touch somebody's heart. Impressing right. is what you do from a distance. And so truly impacting those people that you can spend time with and impacting them in a way that they can pass that along to the people that are with them. And then that becomes an encouragement of, hey, grow yourself, right? Start climbing this ladder and taking this journey of growth, and then showing them how to do that and showing them the paths and giving them the tools to do that. And I think truly when you're looking at, you know, the mountaintop, Carm, that becomes the ideal situation where you have people, it's in their soul and they're driven to grow, and they're looking for places to grow. And that may not be a textbook, that may not be sitting in training, that may not be doing traditional routes. But when you have those quarterly reviews, then you talk about, how did you grow over the last 3 months, and did I help you, and did we do our part to help create that environment? What can we do better, and what's the next step, and where do we keep on going? We strive for that ideal kind of mountaintop constantly, and for me, that's the ideal place. And do we miss quarterly reviews? Absolutely. You know, do we sometimes have people on board that are not, you know, growth driven? Yeah, you know, we're not a perfect company, but I believe, you know, that you shoot for perfection, you land on excellence, right? And that's, in my mind, that's my true goal. And we have tons of people in our company that they are just driven to grow. You know, Brian Holte, you met Chris a couple weeks ago, that's one of my store managers, and that guy is just a sponge, and he's in his 20s and he's running the top store in our company, and he's going to do probably $2.5 million this year. Last year he did 1.8.
Awesome.
And he's just growing, and every time I talk to him, you can just see that his eyes light up, he's open to criticism, and he thanks me every time I give him suggestions instead of getting defensive. And those are, you know, those are those people on your team where you're just like, yeah, that's the mentality that I'm looking for. And you keep making sure that you're pouring into other people so that you bring that out of them as well.
Wow. Guys, I have to tell you, I'm moved by this discussion here today. It went beyond places that I thought it would go. To put a bow on what I've heard, and I'll give each of you a final comment. John Maxwell, my favorite leadership author. I've got a ton of his books listed up and on the books page on the remarkableresults.biz website. I'm doing a series with Mike Davidson, who is a certified John Maxwell trainer and coach, also a shop owner, and we've published three of them so far. We have two more to publish. And, everything rises and falls on leadership. Leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. And so many of us in this industry have done great things to become better leaders, and some of us haven't. And maybe part of the great message here is it starts at the top, Brian. We could go on for 2 hours, and maybe we should come back and do a second part. It's up to you guys. But let's go around the room. Any final comments on this great episode about, creating a training culture? I'll start with you, Brian Holte.
The first thing that I've done is I've tried to make sure that I keep training for myself. It's whether it's in the 20 group, whether it's coaching or listening to books, ebooks. I try to keep myself trained, and that way that I can pass it on and my team sees that I'm trying to grow. That sets the example. I'm not asking them to do things that I'm not doing myself. And I think that by leading by example, that helps. And then trying to be there to answer questions and to encourage when they are growing or when they're struggling, and help them find ways to grow.
Well said, Brian Bates.
You need to define who you are as a company and what your purpose is. Why are you in business? And then find people that align with those values and that purpose. And for us, you know, we have four core values of our company, and one of them is individual and collective growth. And that becomes a non-negotiable for hiring people, and it's a non-negotiable if you're on the team and you're not walking out those values. And having those four values that we hold highest and a purpose for the company really makes it easy to tie into when somebody isn't walking the walk, tie it back into something that's a higher meaning than, hey, this is a requirement of your job and you're either going to do it or you're out of here.
Thank you so much, Dave. Shadeen, Dave, I tell you, there are some incredible leaders in our great automotive aftermarket, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I could listen to both Brians for quite a while. In fact, every shop I go to, as I coach, I go with the anticipation of learning something new. And whether it's from a junior apprentice tech, which up in Toronto, I had this aha moment about differential fluid. And this, he was changing this pristine, clean-looking fluid. And I said, well, you know, the fluid looks pretty clean. Are you sure it needed to be done in that? And he says, oh, yeah, because when I road tested the vehicle, and then he says it this way. He goes, as you know, when you check differential fluid, you have only 3 to 5 minutes to check it to see if it's foaming up. Otherwise, the foam goes away, and it looks pristine, but the anti-foaming agent went away, and you don't know that. And I looked at him and went, oh, yeah, I know that. You know, here I've been coaching in master-level tech and never thought of the phrase, when do you check differential fluid? So all that to say is stay open to training, stay open to grow, stay open to that, to the point where when I went through personal development, my first year that I really saw what I needed to do to take myself as a coach up higher and what my clients expect as a high-level coach, I have to invest in myself. My first year, I invested well over $50,000 in personal development. And then on average now, every year, it's $5,000 to $7,000 of personal development that I put into myself, both my wife and I, because we want to play a bigger game. And if we stop playing a bigger game, I've set the context when I start coaching for them, it's okay for them to not play a bigger game. Even though nothing ever came out of my mouth, it's just the energy I carry into that coaching session. Invest in yourself. Do something for yourself. And I'm going to suggest in our industry another round of a mechanism, how to make a shop profitable. Stay on top of that. But more importantly, be a better version of you. Be a better bankable version of you.
Wow. Thank you all so much. Dave Shadeen, Computech Automotive Management Systems, Brian Holthy, Genesis Automotive and RV, Tacoma, Washington, and Brian Bates, Eagle Automotive, Columbine Hills. Five stores now, and I have changed that from 3 to 5, and another one in the incubator. Isn't that cool? Hey, guys, have a great weekend. Thank you so much for your contributions to the Town Hall Academy.
Thank you, Carm. It's great to be here.
Thanks, Carm.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.